Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to a very special crossover episode of the podcast. This episode, much like Star Wars, The Force Awakens, we join forces with James Harleman of Cinemagogue, Steve Norton of Screenfish, and myself, Fizz, from Real World Theology. We're talking about Captain America, Civil War, probably the biggest film that you'll see, or anyone will see, this year. There's tons to talk about, and we have very little time to talk about it. I want to jump right into our conversation, but believe you me, there's lots of great things going on thematically, ideologically, and man oh man, that airport fight. So, stay with us, enjoy this episode, and we'll see you on the other side.
And I just think we need to register all of our podcasts.
Yes.
You know, and before any of us releases an episode, we all need to vote and make sure it's a good time to release an episode on a particular movie. Because sometimes Steve wants to act unilaterally and he wants to record episodes, but he doesn't need to go there and he might be restricted from going there.
And then we might make him actually review some movies that suck.
Yes.
Yeah. That he doesn't want to go to.
Yeah. But that's not really his call at that point. So
we just started the episode. I don't know what happened there.
Or we just ended the episode. Either way, it depends on It depends on how editing works. But I don't think we actually picked because we planned this pretty strictly. You know, we're all heavy planners, and I don't think anyone specifically volunteered to host this episode.
Right.
So I am graciously stepping into the role of leader. You might call me Captain. but it's really, really great.
Cap too?
Well, you can just call me Cap. Whatever. Hashtag all right, Cap.
All right.
You know.
Wait. It's going to wind up, but you're going to host it on your site, right?
Well, I mean, we'll all share. Well, I mean, I'm
so
sure.
So really, you're paying for it. So you just pay for the stuff. One of us should lead it, right? That's the Tony and Steve back. That's the play, right? I just watched Ultron again. That's how.
Yeah.
Well, I assume Steve's going to post it on his well, and so James, you're the only person who actually probably won't host his own like copy of it.
I'm just Hawkeye. I just sort of I'm going back to my house.
Yeah, you're like I was gone for 6 months, and look what happened. They let you guys have podcasts.
Yeah.
There you go.
They made him sound like such a deadbeat dad in this one after making him sound like such an awesome family guy in the last one. It was like, yeah, my kids and wife are mad, but I got to get back in. And it was like, oh.
Well, unless James, you want to host us here, I can get us started.
Get us started, man.
Okay. Well, it is nice to have both of you back for another crossover event. So it doesn't make it sound like way better. Crossover event. This is like Flash and Arrow, except, you know, with good scripting, amazing casting.
Oh, like with great. Supergirl.
Great acting.
Yeah, great acting, coherent plot. It's amazing. I mean, the last time we got together was for Star Wars, arguably the biggest movie of all, or most important movie of all time, you know, biggest movie of all time. I don't think technically the numbers put it above Avatar worldwide, but for movies that are things that we'd actually like to see over and over and over again, we'll say Star Wars is the biggest. This one may not be the biggest of this year because Rogue One will still probably get a lot of people. But I think outside of that, I would venture to guess Captain America Civil War will be the highest grossing movie worldwide, if not also domestically, of the year. So we've decided to get back together to have a Captain America Civil War, might be actually in another Avengers movie size podcast.
I think
this.
Probably a more civil war than the actual movie itself.
Possibly. Well, I don't know. I thought it was pretty civil. That's the thing. That's the criticism, right? That people,
they didn't fight enough.
They, you know, you never really felt many people's convictions outside of maybe Tony or Cap. Mm. So we have three people, so we can take a vote.
Who gets to be General Ross?
No one's being punished. So are we doing spoilers? How much are we going to spoil this movie? Because I vote spoilers.
All the way spoilers?
I'm all for spoilers, okay. Absolutely.
Well, then here at the beginning, we are saying all the way spoilers. So if you've not somehow seen Captain America, Civil War, please go see it. Or know that we're going to spoil, we're going to talk about major themes and actions from this film. So just know that. Audience.
Like most of the, if you watched all of the trailers, mm-hmm. we will equally spoil all the best moments of the movie for you.
Actually, well, that's a different conversation. So, okay, so this is, like I said, this is a huge movie. This is, like I said, Avengers almost in scale. There's not a world threatening thing, but that's about the only thing that doesn't make this Avengers. We have all the characters, you know, Cap, Iron Man, Black Widow, you know, the Winter Soldier, Falcon, War Machine, Hawkeye, Black Panther. Black Panther. We got Spider-Man. We got Vision. We got Scarlet Witch. We got basically everybody.
Hulk's so mad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I said basically everybody.
Except for Thor, either.
Except for the people with, well, Vision almost has godlike powers, you'd think, but almost anyone who doesn't have godlike powers is in this movie.
But he's standing around in an apron. Let's not get into that.
That was
fantastic.
But we're going to get into that in Infinity War, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
So it's okay. So this is a huge movie, and we just came out of a huge movie. And I love introductory questions. And I know we are short on time, and we have to get to a lot of things. But there is no way that this movie, because it already is not going to get compared to Batman versus Superman, who it just came out, which has a plot of two characters that we typically really like fighting each other, who are both good guys. You know, similar with Captain America Civil War. So how are these movies different? How do these movies succeed and or compare, Steve?
Okay, so this is the big question right now, right? Everybody's talking about these two things. And I've done a lot of thought. We've had a lot of arguing over at Screenfish about this too. I actually see that Civil War, I feel like, is a more successful movie because it's more enjoyable. But Batman and Superman, I admit it doesn't have the script. Does it have a script?
It may not have.
It may not have a script. But the interesting thing to me is that Civil War succeeds because it had like 10 movies beforehand. Every one of these characters walks into the room and you already have a bit of a backstory for almost each one of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's what helps. Civil War, I think, struggles to me. I really liked Civil War, but I didn't go completely bananas and say, this is the best movie I've ever seen. And, oh my gosh, this is incredible. For me, it's funny because Batman v Superman actually works on some levels. I really liked how ambitious the script was, which is why this film actually made me more disappointed, because Batman v Superman was more ambitious in terms of what it was trying to say, whereas this film was trying to get to something really significant, but already had the character development that it could sort of land there without doing a lot of work. I think that this is a far better film. Like, there's no question in my mind, but I do feel like both films are suffering from the same problem, which is trying to introduce new characters. Even though I love the new characters, let's be serious. When Batman and Superman came out, all we talked about was Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And when Civil War came out, we're all talking about Black Panther and Spider-Man. And in both cases, the characters are amazing. Like, they come out with them and you're just like, that's who I want to see in the next film. But for me, the films are actually suffering because of it. Because if we want to talk about the Slovenia Accord or whatever it is, you know, that we're not getting...
Sokovia, yeah.
Sokovia Accord, rather than getting to the heart of the issue very often, to me, they're focusing more and more on trying to drive through to Infinity War, which Batman and Superman, I mean, other than there were a host of other problems that Civil War didn't have. Civil War just had a better script. But Batman and Superman, again, from the moment it started, we knew that they were forcing it into Justice League. And I understand that that's what these things are, and I get it. But to me, it wasn't that they were totally different because, like, there was a huge similarity to me because of that. I don't know. What did you guys think?
Well, I would say I'll ask James the same question because, James, I know you've been a fairly solid apologist for Batman v Superman. Do you think Batman v Superman did what it intended to do? And do you think Civil War did what it intended to do?
I think Batman versus Superman didn't succeed nearly as well as Civil War. I also think it's difficult if you go back and you look, if we actually compared movies. I mean, this is for Batman v Superman is the MCU's Incredible Hulk, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
we have a second film, which generally nobody thought. I mean, it is not well thought of in the context of all of those films, and a lot of people complain about it even in the context of just being CGI, lots of different pieces. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of inherent problems and flaws there, right? So, I think that I can forgive BVS for some of its issues, and I've been an apologist only to say it's not people seem to be locked in a binary, very binary nature lately. Mm-hmm. Either a film is 4 stars or 0 or -4 stars. So I'm just like, all right, guys, I think let's not call it an F. I think it was a C or C minus. I think with an extra half hour of coherence added back in, it could even achieve a B minus. But I don't know that yet. We will see. I'm very curious to see what the producers chopped out. So, I think Civil War, they have their rhythm, they have their way of telling these stories at a much better level now. And one thing that I really liked about Civil War, growing up as a big comic book fan, there's a whole culture change that I think maybe I'm not going to excuse and the inherent flaws. I mean, you read an issue of a comic, you want it to be a certain amount of things. You want it to move a sequential art storyline of an ongoing character down the playing field. And so you think in terms of comics differently than you would normally would think of, I want to go into a theater and come out a couple hours later with a certain type of experience. I think it achieved a very Civil War achieved what you would expect if you picked up, well, maybe more like a trade paperback in a number of ongoing volumes of a series. Like if you're reading Fables or reading Captain America or reading whatever it is. Like if you pick up a volume, you come into somebody's life and you leave, and there are a lot of those loose ends and threads, and it's moving it down the board. And there's usually something that gets resolved in the middle. And so if we start changing our very concept of what we're doing with these things, I think Civil War achieved probably what some of the Marvel people are trying to do. As far as being a wholly satisfying film in and of itself, like, say, The Winter Soldier, I think succeeds at a much better level of that. I don't think Civil War achieved sort of being, you know, there seems to be a let's have every film, and even in competition with DC versus Marvel, like every film has to top whatever just came out. Yeah. I don't think they topped themselves with this. I think they did better than they ironed out some wrinkles from Age of Ultron in dealing with such a large cast. So I think they're on their way to getting the groove. And so for that, I give them high marks. Like they're learning and growing and doing it better. Hmm. So they achieved, and Black Panther certainly had, I mean, Wonder Woman was a great character teasing out, I guess, you sort of like, oh, this looks like she could be great. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the Black Panther actually has one of the most satisfying character arcs, I thought, in the movie. Hmm.
So especially in these comparisons, we talk about what the intention was or what the conflict was. Because when you have a movie like Batman v Superman, you expect there to be a central conflict. You want to be on board with that conflict. You want to pick a side, and you want to see it come to fruition. In Civil War, we were already set up Iron Man versus, you know, Captain America. We knew kind of what we were getting into. I mean, the marketing for this was everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, everything was hashtag Team Cap, hashtag Team Iron Man. You know, so you had to pick a side. And before the movie even came out, you didn't necessarily know. Unless, of course, you read the comics, you had a pretty good idea. If you watched the movies previous, you might have had an inkling of what was going on. But when we actually get into Civil War, James, can you flesh out the 30,000 feet, the really high up view of why these two guys have an ideological difference and why we should be picking sides?
Well, I think as this right, that big document they flop on the desk seems to be, is obviously a MacGuffin, because we how can we actually say what we would think our decision would be in the context of the film itself when they actually, I mean, we never get to read the accords or even mm-hmm. know any of the nuance. So to take any side based on that's kind of crazy. But so really, we're just left with a very basic ideological difference. And that is Tony effectively, I mean, Tony, to me, and if a little pastor starts to come out, I apologize. Sorry, not sorry. And I mean, he really represents to me somebody who is tossed to and fro. We've seen for somebody to be Team Iron Man. If somebody, I think most people who went into this movie as Team Iron Man, they love Iron Man. But if you actually take Team Iron Man, you have to reject everything Tony has been and said and done in all of his previous films, because he has been the one flouting the government authority. He's been the one doing all of those things. So he has decided for his own sake, that for his own sake and then everyone else, that we need constraints, which isn't a bad idea, but it seems like a decision yet again made out of a knee jerk, which tends to be his modus operandi. So then you're left with Cap, who really has this. I mean, he at one point, as we know, he's like, with the right considerations, I could sign something. He's not anti-accord, and Tony isn't so pro-accord, because before the film even gets halfway through, Tony says it's flawed, but it's better, it's inevitable, so it's good that we're in here so we can fix it along the way and be an influencer. Mm-hmm. So right. To me, it's the ideology behind, do I ally myself with something I know is horribly flawed and assume that I can be an influencer of change from within, or do I stand firm until it is perfectly right before I will sign on and ratify something and put my name on it? And that's truly at the heart of it. Since all the other nuances you could argue day in, day out, those are really in many ways the two. To me, that is the conflict. Can I stand in compromise with something, hoping to change it from within, or do I need to stand outside even if it costs me everything?
I was gonna say, I think that's a good explanation of it. And so I would ask Steve, unless you have some other nuance to add to what James just said, I would say or ask, where did you land on that? Like, do you felt like both sides were represented well?
Well, to me, first of all, I can't remember the name of the accord again. I keep wanting to say
the Sokovia Accord.
Sokovia. I keep wanting to say Slovakia. Okay, Sokovia. For me, the Sokovia Accord was interesting because it really is different from the comic. And in the comic, it's very much about registration. You know, it's almost like an X-Men type of battle where we need to know who everyone is. So it's really about identity. This is more about authority. So, you know, going into the film, I think James is absolutely right. You know, everyone that I knew was talking about being Team Cap. Well, why? Because I like Cap better. Or Team Iron Man. Why? Because I have that history and I prefer Iron Man.
Well, Iron Man's a great character. You know, they're both really great characters. I can see why anybody going into the film would be on either side.
Well, let's be clear. Iron Man dresses better.
Yeah.
He's got more money, man. He better. But, you know, the funny thing, I agree with that. I can understand that. And the funny thing is, all the marketing for the film was all about your favorite people. It wasn't about ideas. It was be Team Cap, be Team Iron Man. That's what it was. Who are you? But to me, I don't know. I struggled because I saw that both of them come out as kind of arrogant at one point or another. You know, the argument is, I mean, with Cap, for example, it's obviously his movie. So we're far more sympathetic to him and his ideology. But yeah, and yes, he does at one point say, okay, with some safeguards, okay. So what happens right next? Tony says, well, we've got a bit of a safeguard. We're watching the girl. We're watching Scarlet Witch. Vision's got her in the room. We just want to keep her safe. And he flips out. As soon as this safeguard, if you will, that they had outlined, Cap says, forget it. I'm out of there. This is not what I want. This is not what I'm looking for. But then Tony, once as he's going on, yeah, he knows it's flawed, but he quits on it. Now, obviously, we root for him to do that because yeah. General Ross is, you know, he's the ultimate villain, if you will, of the piece. You know, he's the Pierce, Alexander Pierce, I think that was his name, Robert Redford and Winter Soldier of right. the film. He sort of is the overarching nemesis bad guy. And as soon as sort of that is revealed, Iron Man says, well, then I'm going to go off on my own. And he sort of does his own thing. So he rejects his own ideology as the film goes on. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that was kind of what then clinches it for me is, all right, if once to and fro, once again, we've got this guy who I think by nature has a very flexible or fluid morality versus a character who, right or wrong, has a very fixed idea that there is an absolute morality. And that was an interesting note to me to be, you know, if people are Team Iron Man, I think it's like, well, man, by the end of the movie, then doesn't that mean you're Team Cap? Because he tells the Falcon he's wrong. He then proceeds to do the exact same action, you know, going into another country, taking action without mm-hmm. permission, just like in Berlin. So he's de facto saying he's right, but then at the end, his buddy's crippled and says, I still believe in him, so he can't. I'm almost wondering at the end, man, is Tony trapped kind of knowing he's wrong, but he kind of has to support it because otherwise then his friend's been crippled for nothing? Or I was ideologically, it seemed very clear to me that the movie kind of did a 1-2-3 strike, you're out, because then Tony even then can't get his head together like the Panther by contrast does at the end. It seemed to be very, I was surprised hearing all the talk about how allegedly even they were going to try to play it, how it really, there's so much hypocrisy, emotionality and compromise from Tony throughout the film and mm-hmm. flip-flopping. It didn't reflect as well on him as I thought they were going to make it. So I was actually a little surprised they didn't play it as 50-50 in from my perception. I don't know, but back to Steven or Mikey. I mean, maybe there's another angle on that. I mean, arrogant they both are, but Tony ultimately is still his own ultimate authority if he will break a lot of constrained people whenever he feels like it. So,
And at the film, I feel like Tony's the one. The other guys are criminals by the law, but he's the one that's in prison. Like there's a beautiful shot after they've left him and they leave him there on the ground and they've got sort of the, you know, he's got the windows, but the windows almost look like almost bars, and he's just sort of defeated lying there. And you get this sense that Tony is just trapped by his real battle is no longer with this, his battles within himself. It's the guilt that he's been fighting the entire film.
That's beautiful. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, that in and of itself is a great picture that we get of Iron Man at the end. And admittedly, I was Team Cap going in, and I would more or less be Team Cap going out. But the thing I love about Iron Man is kind of what James is already talking about, which is the thing that you think that I wouldn't like or that people wouldn't like, which is he does kind of turn, like he doesn't even follow his own rules. I like that about it because he admits up front it's not perfect. He's like, this isn't a perfect solution, but we need to do something. And the thing that I don't necessarily think that I hear people talking about with Cap's perspective, and I think this movie heavily skews to Cap, which, you know, may be deserved since it's technically his movie.
It's his name.
Yeah, his name, you know, so he kind of, you know, he's entitled to do that, is the fact that we don't see Tony pushing his convictions out, like pushing an absolute conviction out to an absolute end. We see him uncertain, trying to do something and getting mixed results. And I feel like he was honest up front. He was conflicted in the middle. And I think he's still conflicted at the end because he lives in the real world. And I think that makes sense. Cap, on the other hand, as much as I love Cap because he is a good guy, it's much like, I don't know if, James, you linked this article or I just was getting ready for the show, but it flashed back to the scene in Captain America: The First Avenger when the scientist is telling Steve that the serum doesn't just make him stronger, it enhances everything, you know, so good becomes great. So Cap has this moral compass that is amazing, that he's always trying to do the right thing. We get this line in Civil War that says, you know, I wish I didn't want to always do the right thing, basically. And, you know, Tony's like, yeah, you do. And he's like, yeah, I kind of do. And we want to get behind that. It sounds great. It sounds awesome. But the more and more I hear people kind of cheering this, the more and more I hear people getting behind this idea that Cap has that I don't think we've followed out to its absolute conclusion or its logical conclusion. And this idea of Cap saying everyone needs to make a personal choice. And as long as we're making a personal choice and following what we personally believe, then we're personally doing the right thing for the greater good. And that sounds great when Captain America says it. But I think that sounds terrible when almost anybody else says it. And, like, as much as I want to be on Team Cap for this and follow it out, when I do follow it out to its logical conclusion, I feel there is some real moral issues at the end of that conclusion, which is, based on his own argument, I think Cap is like, yeah, ISIS? Hey, y'all are doing what you believe. You are acting on what you believe, and you should be allowed to do that. You shouldn't have other people telling you what to do. You know, racists in America, like, you really believe that, you know, other races are inferior to yours. You need to act out on that. You need to be the tree. You need to be the one that people have to move. Don't move for them. And maybe that's taking it to an extreme case, but like I said, I want his argument to be logically, I don't know, true. And it doesn't hit that for me. Am I the only person sitting in this camp who's really followed that out?
No, I agree with you on that. And see, this is where I think that, you know, there's a fundamental flaw in this. But I wouldn't say that Cap would, if ISIS came and he said, you know, you are doing what you believe, I would say he wouldn't, because Cap's argument seems to be basically the whole way, this is what I think is right, and therefore everyone else is wrong. So in a case of something like ISIS, I don't think he would support them or something or some other conflicting ideology. Otherwise, he would support the Accord, or he would be more supportive of other people. He would take more of a stance of – more of a postmodern stance that says, you know what, Tony – I disagree with you, but that's right for you. You do it. That's okay. Cap says no. Cap says no, because I think it's wrong. It is wrong.
That's a good point. He doesn't operate that's the idea, and the lines that he said in this movie aren't in a vacuum. And I think that's, I mean, I found myself wandering from a quote from the quotes in Cap, actually what Peggy transmits posthumously to Cap is actually a quote from Cap in the comics, and actually coming after a long quote he relates to Peter Parker from Mark Twain about what a republic is. And it becomes very clear reading all of that and then jumping over to even just the basic definition of a libertarian, exactly where Captain America stands. I also think if I take him as a whole versus Tony as a whole, I love that Tony, I do love and appreciate that I thought in this movie he was going to never have a rearview mirror. I thought he was, like some guys I know, he's going to move ahead with a changed stance and even morality, that it might even be better, but not recognize or acknowledge the past mistakes, which I've, and yet he actually multiple times is acting out of a struggle for repentance. And so I do have empathy and respect for Tony's journey in its own right, in that he is struggling through that and trying to figure that out. I think the idea of Cap is that he's not in a vacuum. And I'm not going to appeal to the one line in the first Avengers movie where he does appear to believe in one God. But yet I would, between that and the idea that I was just reading today, Stan Lee was asked who should win. And it was actually before the movie came out. And Stan Lee said, well, Cap, because he is the purest heart in the entire world. I think for Stan Lee, Captain America is the closest thing he can relate to the incarnation. I think he's Marvel Comics Aslan or Aragorn. And so I do, yeah, which is someone who were kind of like they strove for in Man of Steel, whether you think they failed or not, that whole idea of you can't control me, but I'm not your enemy. And I think that's they're struggling for that, whether they achieved that or transmitted it well, whether Steve is without flaw. Age of Ultron, we asked if he has, you know, when asked about a dark side, he says maybe you haven't seen it yet. Maybe we are getting into a little of that. But I'm not sure exactly where Marvel will go with some of the Infinity stuff and where characters will go. But I think the idea is that I'm just wondering if they aren't toying with the idea or playing with the idea that maybe there is an absolute, is there an absolute morality? And is he one of the few people in the universe that actually has himself tethered to it? I don't know.
Well, and see, so I'm on board with him being the Marvel Universe Superman, basically the Aslan or the Aragorn, you know, like he is the representative of the best man can be, or the closest thing to a benevolent, pure character that we're going to get. But the problem that I still find is I know he's not saying these lines in a vacuum, but almost everything he says points to this idea of him not saying that he is the absolute one. He's saying that everyone kind of needs to be able to have the right to choose. Like, he gives that big speech when him and Tony, or he gives a speech, but they kind of have it back and forth. And, you know, he says, I know we're not perfect, but the safest hands are still our own. So he's also giving the onus to Tony and Scarlet Witch and Vision, you know, and Hawkeye. He's saying all of us are equally ready to make really great moral choices, when we've seen in previous films, and even in this film, that all those people are not really great at making their own choices. So they can be true to themselves all they want. They can have as much moral relativism as they want, but they're going to conflict. And so Cap almost is fighting his own argument. It's like when Hawkeye comes down and he's kind of mocking Iron Man, and he says, the futurist is here, gentlemen. He sees all. He knows what's best for you, whether you like it or not. That also describes Cap in this film. And that's what's hard for me. Because, like I said, if I'm not thinking about ideology taken to its logical conclusion, then in general, yes, I am fine with Cap making decisions about what is probably right and probably wrong morally. Because even, yeah, if we don't take the there's only one God line at face value, Cap is probably still the closest thing to a pure character that we have. But I still think he's being hypocritical basically the entire movie. And I think, Steve, you hit on this a little bit too. And so that's what's hard for me, because I think ultimately he's arguing, especially when he argues that, what does he say? He said it. If we sign this thing, it's run by people with agendas, and agendas change. And so he's arguing that his agenda never changes, or in this case, the Avengers agenda should never change. Even though they all have different views of what's right and wrong, at what extremes they could go to, especially when you start bringing Black Widow into the, and things that she's done, Tony and his ability to compromise on occasion. He says, if we sign that, we surrender our right to choose. So Cap is arguing ultimately as the highest ideal, people's right to choose. And I think that is what lots of moral relativist movies, we get lots in Hollywood. That's what we get almost all the time. The best thing that you can have is freedom, right?
Yep.
And we keep arguing the other side of that as Christians, saying, you know, freedom is not really freedom to make my own mistakes isn't really a freedom. There's a bigger freedom.
Well, but, see that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
James. I was say, but both of you want to jump in. So, James, what do you?
I was going to say no, absolutely. I mean, this is every character that Patrick Stewart has ever played, except for Andrew, so.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, it's the most you're ever going to get out of Marvel. And he even says, like, I have faith in people. And so the difference to it, since I know I'm never going to get, like, yeah, is I'm never going to get, well, okay, you know, I don't think the original American libertarian perspective was outside of God having authority. Yeah. But it was, how much can we have as little government authority as possible so that people have it? You know, like, how do you juxtapose that so that government is very, very small and people actually are living according to a shared agreement on Christ. I mean, like that would be, I mean, not all founding fathers. Some of the libertarian ideals of some of the early steps of the country were more with that in mind. We didn't have the religious diversity that we're experiencing now, which is a whole different conversation. But Captain America is at best representing that. It, I guess what really seems to me is that Tony still seems to be operating. I mean, in one sense, he's struggling for change. But to me, the movie is faith versus fear. Tony is still operating out of the need for control. I want a suit of armor around the world. When Ultron didn't work, now he's turning to the government. I will make this. I know it's inevitable and it's flawed, but I'll make it work for me. And he still wants something to control his fear. He still has that vision of all the Avengers dead. Now mm-hmm. he has the vision of a little Sokovian boy dead. And whereas Cap, now I would say, Cap's faith is falls short of really landing a plane anywhere, and at best kind of says it's nebulously in people. So I find both, like, I find Cap's has a shortcoming, but to me Tony's is more inherently flawed, I think. But then I will counter myself and say, then again, I am not. I also don't believe. I believe that God is love. I also believe there are an extraordinary number of verses that say there is a right fear, and that is the fear of Him. So, one can we have this own struggle, even of grappling with how we understand ourselves. Fear and faith actually tie into us both well. I stand corrected as I speak. Mm. That is a weird conundrum. If neither of those things are in the right place, obviously shortcomings abound.
Sense. Yeah, Steve, jump in.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that I've been thinking about this is all the advertising, all of this has been, which team are you on? It's either you're Iron Man, you're Cap. Well, to me, one of the key themes of this whole film, or when it gets down to the ideological struggle, is about power and humility. Because it seems to be that the people who are in power, you look at Tony, for example. In some ways, you look. Tony is willing to give his power over to someone who is greater. I'm not talking about God here. I'm not going all spiritual on this. Just hear me out. But
you could, you know, if you wanted to. You realize what kind of podcast this is, right?
It's true.
Thunderbolt Ross. Thunderbolt Ross kind of thinks he's God. So, no, go
on. Yes, that's right. That's right. But he's willing to get rid of that power in the hope that someone greater than he, quote unquote, will be able to do something more with it. Now, when he realizes that he isn't, he takes it back. Cap asserts that the way I read it sort of is that Cap asserts that power for himself. No, we are the strongest hands. You know, stick with us. We need to stay together. This is about us. We are the ones. We're the ones that can hold the sword and use it properly. And so it becomes this ideological battle of, no, this is right or this is wrong. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, when people even talk about scripture, for example, they talk about truth in a both and sense. You know, like James mentioned there are times when there is wrath, yet God is a God of love. So if God is a God of love, the argument is always, well, then how can there be wrath? Well, there's a both and. There's a tension there. There's a both and in the middle. Because if you're all wrath, you're without love. Now, I'm not going to say if you're all love, you're without wrath, but generally people would assume that one is. And that's one of the things I saw in this film as I'm watching the two of these guys. You know, I would, if that conversation at the very beginning about the Sokovia Accord, where Cap says there's got to be safeguards, if that goes on for another 15, 20 minutes, they might have been able to work something out, maybe. Because what you had is Cap saying, like, again, we're going back to James's argument about changing things from within. But if you have Cap who's saying, okay, I want to maintain the fact that we have some individuality and some authority here, but let's make some adjustments. And Iron Man is saying, yes, but we need something else at the same time. I understand what you're saying. If that conversation continues rather than draw the hard battle lines, you know, this maybe things don't go the route mm-hmm. that they.
Well, I would say if the Sokovia Accords were drawn up, well, they probably wouldn't be called the Sokovia Accords.
Sokovian Awards.
Yay! Biggest building demolishing. You know, I think if they were drawn up in a non-reactionary way, then I think they would have been able to talk this out. But when you throw in like the Winter Soldier into the mix, and the Baron Zemo.
Finding Zemo?
Yeah, Finding Zemo. If you throw that in all at the one time, it gives like a face to everything Cap is afraid of.
Right.
So I mean, and that's what keeps happening, right? Tony keeps talking to Steve, and Steve says, "Oh man, okay, yeah, I guess if we're a part of it, we can change it. We'll put this little piece behind us. Okay, I'm almost on board. But then something happens that reminds him of the immediate problems that they're going to have. Like, what it looks like when Scarlet Witch is basically imprisoned. I mean, you know, they're calling it something nice, but it's basically, you know,
it's internment camp phase point, you know, point 1.0, right?
Yeah, it's house arrest, but it's really like an internment. You know, they're not letting her go anywhere. Yeah. And he goes, well, that, you know, he's from the World War II era. He knows what's up. You know, he knows what that looks like when it starts.
Right.
You're not gonna get that past Cap. Cap doesn't see that as like a speed bump. He sees that as a big freaking waving red flag, you know, to something earlier or to something bigger. It's the same thing he argues in Winter Soldier, you know. When he goes, hey, I know what you see this as, but this is what it really looks like when it manifests itself. And I think that's wise on Cap's part. But I think if those things weren't immediately decisions that needed to be made, I think they could talk it out. Because I think they would read through this MacGuffin that James points out. They would read through it and they'd be like, okay, so what do we do with people we don't agree with? We put them in a big giant prison in the middle of the ocean they can't get out of. Cap would be like, question, you know.
Which no one reads it, by the way.
Yeah.
No one opens it.
Well, I assume that Tony had Friday read it for him, and she gave him the cliff notes or whatever. So, well, we're going to run out of time before we know it. So I want to get to one other thing that I know both of you guys are really itching to talk about as well. So we're going to see if we can hit this real quick. One is, let's make this a two-part question so we can do it quick. Part A, and it's very simple, new Spider-Man, yay or nay. All right, that's 1A. 1B is... how do I want to put this? What can we learn from Black Panther's arc? So Steve, 1A, 1B.
Oh man. New Spider-Man, yay. Are you kidding me?
There you go.
Spider-Man has come home, and I don't mean just with the title of Homecoming. Like it makes sense that Spider-Man has come back to Marvel. I don't care if Sony's getting all the money. Just having Marvel handle the property again felt right. Although Aunt May seems to be Benjamin Buttoning herself, and it's getting weird.
Back through time.
Eventually, Aunt May and I are going to meet in the middle, and it's going to be an uncomfortable moment for all of us. But for Black Panther's storyline, to me, he was easily the most interesting character in the film.
Because...
I'm trying to put it into words, so bear with me here for a second. Because his character actually really goes on a journey. He goes from victim to hero isn't the word, but certainly, and savior is too strong, but hero to rescuer is probably the best way to describe it. You have this someone who he's been told he is the one who killed your father. And the entire film, he's after him. He is seeking vengeance. And yet, when he learns the truth, his heart is truly changed. And then he becomes his defender. It's actually such a fascinating arc to me to watch that, because at the end, he's actually protecting the very man who he believed for so much of the film actually killed his father. And there is so much blame there. But see, here again, the concept of truth, when the truth is revealed to him, it humbles him. And he realizes that he has been wrong the whole time, and he completely changes his stance for one of safety. For him, it's not Team Iron Man or Team Cap. He's not really on a team. He's on his own team the whole way through the film. He just happens to side with Iron Man because he's trying to get the same people. But at the end of the film, he is the one who has had the greatest sense of healing. Tony's in more damage than he was at the beginning of the film. No wonder the Pepper walked out. Tony is crushed by guilt. He's just in this emotional prison, as I'd said before. Cap may be free, quote unquote, but he's on the run. And then at the same time, you have this guy who is basically at peace. And that to me was what I felt about Black Panther. He sort of shone the moral light on so many of the other characters.
I like all that. And we'll quickly move on to James so we have time to get to everything. 1A, 1B.
Well, you're not going to hear any complaints about Spider-Man from me. I'm not as harsh on I'm not necessarily Team Garfield or Team Toby as far as the past goes, although Spider-Man 2 is probably still one of my favorite just favorite adaptations. Maybe I'm just a Doc Ock fan, but I absolutely loved his introduction. I think they did a great job teeing that up. Loved his reference to one of my top 10 films, of course, The Empire Strikes Back. Loved the way that he, you know, and just that everything, by the way, only his introduction only overshadowed, I think, by the best moment of the film, which was Ant becoming giant man. So that was probably the truly most unexpected, crazy thing that happened. The thing, if I was taken aback by anything in the movie, it wasn't the idea. It was not ideologies. I know everybody thinks he's the cinema guy. He's thinking deep. It's like, no, dude, he just got huge. That was awesome.
That was it.
Like that was the movie for me. That was the big core right there. Just boom. And that was, so there, that fight scene obviously is going to make people talk, and that's fine. And I'm a fanboy. So there you go. And as far as, as I mentioned, I think to you before we started, Mikey, I'm wearing a Black Panther shirt right now, not just because it's my wife's favorite character, but also because Team Panther, I mean, all the way. Like, yeah, he gets everything. I mean, you think about how many characters, Batman, Spider-Man, like there's a tragic loss of parental figure or figures. And he moves through all those pieces with a grace, which we have just not seen. And I think as you guys were talking about, if they'd actually ever conversed, there's this beautiful moment. And I could feel it when he steps, he's not fully in the room with them. And he kind of pulls back in the hallway. And it was just like, oh, wow, it's the first character in the movie who's going to listen. Like he's just gonna drink in what is being spoken here, and he's actually going to receive it and act on it instead of reacting. And that was a small quiet moment, which I think probably maybe hopefully some of the best Black Panther moments will be. But I was very surprised, and going into the film with a wife, neither we expected a cameo probably less than Spider-Man. So the fullness and richness of that was great. And I must say, it seems as though, you know, let them try. It seems, again, the film itself, whether people are going to see it or not, the film itself definitely seems to be then saying who he's showing some compassion, space, and sanctuary to. It's like, well, he is not becoming Team Cap, but yet I think there's an understanding of their position in a way that, you know, Tony has now failed again. Granted, he just watched a video versus having it be a few days before, but they failed the emotional reaction. He failed the emotional reactional test. Black Panther passes. And so in some ways, maybe we'll see that. Like, and he's a king. So maybe there is an even greater, if there's going to be a messianic figure in all of this Marvel stuff, it's like, here we have a king of a kingdom that seems very different from all the others, that here who actually passes a test of the son becoming king. And so all right, so maybe Cap is not the messianic figure that we should be tying ourselves to here. Like, if there's a metaphor in the story, maybe it's T'Challa. So, that's easily. I'm really looking forward to where they take it. I think that there's aspects of Cap's arc. I do think he could have listened. I see Cap trying to listen at points where I don't think Tony is. So maybe that's just the great conversation. Maybe actually listening is one of the best takeaways we can have from the film.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess he could always, Cap strategically became friends with Black Panther so he can get a new shield. He's like, can you make me a shield? Because I just gave my other one up and it was kind of scratched up anyway. Well, let's end with this. Let's just take a minute. We got about 5 or 6 minutes left. So, Steve, what just were some of your favorite parts of this movie? So, what did you really enjoy from this film?
Oh, you mean other than the airport scene, which might be the single greatest battle scene of all of Marvel Cinematic History?
itself is a conversation, because you almost knew no one was going to die. So was it really that great? Would it have been as cool if you could have watched, like, you know, a team of supervillains versus a team of heroes where there was actually a chance for something bad to happen?
Well, yeah, it's true. It's true. I considered that because
still fun.
Yeah, still fun. Like that, there was a lightheartedness, and like you said, you had Giant Man show up, which, by the way, Lego kind of gave that spoiler away. I was kind of ticked by that.
Glad I missed that.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I have a 5-year-old man. That's Lego ruined it. No, but they used Spider-Man well. They really brought him in effectively. And it is funny, though. It had that Lord of the Rings feel at the beginning where you've got the two sides and they're like walking, marching, and then running at each other. But after that, the fight really happens. So for me, that was the highlight of the film in so many ways. In so many ways for me. I'm just going to leave it there. That was the highlight of the film for me, was that key moment.
No, I was going to say, but let me ask you this.
Sure.
And it doesn't necessarily require a great explanation, only because we're, again, pressed for time. Do you feel like that's a negative against the movie, that in a Civil War, the something between Iron Man and Cap and all the moments that they had wasn't the thing you remember the most? It's the airport fight?
Yeah. In truth, I feel that way, because one of the things I felt about this film, as much as I loved it, and I really did, I feel bad even, you know, I feel bad sometimes the way I describe it, because I truly love the film.
Yeah.
But to me, I wanted more conversation about what was going on. I really did. And I'm not talking about like a Star Trek, let's all sit around the round table and debate it for 45 minutes of the film. Well, you know, go to the Galactic Alliance and Senate and have these. But to me, it was so much of, there were so many stories going on that really, other than T'Challa, I didn't feel like there were a lot of them that really got in depth.
Mm.
And that to me was the issue with the film, is it, but now you sure you had the 9 films building up to it. But that was one of the things that bothered me, is the fight itself had to be the highlight for me, because there was less story than some of the solo outings that they've had.
Yeah. Well, and I said, I completely get that. And that's why I asked that question, because I want to make sure that we're all enjoying this film, but we're also being rational about it. We're also being reasonable. You know, cause I saw some criticism that the fight wasn't that great because you knew there was no one that was really going to get hurt, at least specifically from the fight. There was obviously peripheral damage, with War Machine, but that was, you know, accidental. But
I don't know why they didn't kill. They telegraphed, they teased you in the previews.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they would just go ahead and make good on that, because
it would have made the stakes more real.
A loss of someone would have made that a lot better. In fact, we were watching Winter, so we were rewatching things and rewatching Winter Soldier, and there's a great conversation that Steve and has with Natasha about, you know, there's that. He put his life on the line for her. He's like, I believe you'd do the same for me. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be a beautiful surprise if the spy who wasn't even sure, you know, was slowly earning the trust, laid down her life, some character actually mm-hmm. give themselves in this film. And that was a disappointment. It's like, we know these actors aren't going to be in the roles forever. We know they're going to have to segue them out and switch them with some of the new, you know, rotations of new films and newer. It's like, man, what? Come on, give somebody a glorious sacrificial exit. That felt painfully shallow to me. To be true,
I definitely expected to come out of this movie with Captain America dead, and probably something like Bucky picking up the mantle.
And then I figured Doctor Strange or somebody would go fetch him off the astral plane and bring him back for Infinity War. I still would have been happy. I still would have been moved, even if part of me would have known contractually he'll be back to fight Thanos. But
when it comes to that fight, I think of it. You know, obviously everyone was still friends. Like people, it's like trying to get an advantage. Like no one was trying to kill anybody. People were just trying to prevent people from doing other things. I imagine it like a big game of football, you know, like when you get on the field, you have things that you're trying to prevent the other team from doing. But when the game's over, you're like, well, I didn't really want to kill you. You know, I just wanted to prevent you from doing a thing at the time. And so I think they addressed it. They were like, are you pulling your punches? You know, there was plenty of that. I don't think anyone was trying to kill anybody.
I think that's why the moment with Rhodey is the powerful one, right? Because that was the one where it was like, wait a second. You know, when Rhodey falls from the sky near the end of the film, it's like, wait a second. You know, okay, I thought they should have killed him off. But if they decide to do Demon in the Bottle, they need him around. But, you know, that was the moment where it actually sort of becomes more real and more personal. But I agree with you.
Well, okay, so James, what best part?
Best part, wow.
Or you know, thing I'm you not, like I'm the not, most, whatever.
I'm not going to be able to go. I mean, it was when Spider-Man doing the web leg takedown. I mean, like there's some moments in there that were beautiful. Although I'll say I got to juxtapose it. The skirmish with Rumlow, the crossbones battle at the beginning reminded me of the intensity of the battles in the Winter Soldier. Whereas I think the airport battle was kind of what I'm hoping, not to overly slight Age of Ultron, but where I thought the everybody together in one big movie was stumbled a little more. I feel like they got closer to that mix with the airport battle of just classic one-on-ones. But I would say those were equal to me, just because I enjoyed the introduction of, you know, Falcon and Red Wing and working together and almost having that. It had much more of that spy movie theme again, which Winter Soldier is my top movie. So that harkened back to that.
Yeah. Well, and I'd say this too. I read more than one person lamenting the fact that Crossbones' exit marks another probably far too early exit for a solid Marvel villain. You know, like he would have been good to stick around for a while. He could have drummed up some interest, I think.
Yeah.
But so my favorite parts of this, what's up?
What about you, Mikey?
Yeah, I was going to say, my favorite parts, I've established a small list and I will run through these very quickly. I want to thank the Russo brothers for directing this film, because the more films they direct, the more cameos I get from community people. So I love seeing Jim Rash. I love seeing Jim Rash make a cameo. I giggled. I loved the humor that they used throughout this movie. A couple examples are during the airport fight when Spider-Man's fighting, you know, the Winter Soldier and Falcon finally kind of knocks him out, and the Winter Soldier's like, couldn't you have done that earlier? And Falcon just says, I hate you. And I'm like, did you just say I hate you? That is so hilarious. I don't know why it's so funny, but and then they have this moment where some people are calling it the knock on Batman v Superman, but you know, obviously they probably filmed this way before the movie was out or they knew anything about it. But when Winter Soldier Bucky is saying, your mother's name was Sarah, blah, 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 blah. And Falcon goes, so we're just supposed to take that and be okay with it? You know, like a mother's name is going to be that big, big of a difference maker. So kind of ha-ha, elbow, Batman v Superman.
I don't think that one was intentional, but I do think when they're running each other at the airport, that's like the opening to Super Friends. I don't know if you remember the old cartoon. They'd always have like the two sides running at each other, and then boom, rainbow colors. And I was just like, that. If anything was a in-your-face DC, I felt that was it. Sorry,
well,
go
the,
on.
What I was saying, well, because you also had the Spider-Man and Winter Soldier like catching each other's fists or whatever. You know, the same shot. Yeah. I mean, that's not like a comic icon shot. You know,
every film does that. Yeah, it just happens to be the week after or a month after.
Which is great because it's interesting to see other people noticing these things now. I would say my second favorite thing in the movie, because I seriously giggled, was when Steve Rogers kisses Sharon Carter, and just the perfect look on Falcon and Bucky's faces when they cut back to the car. Oh my gosh. I just thought it was, I just laughed audibly.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Cause it wasn't just like, haha. It was like they nailed that look. And for so many, you know, especially if you're invested in Cap's character, it even is more funny. And then my favorite moment, the thing that I sadly already saw in the preview, but when I saw it in the theater, it still gave me goosebumps, was when Cap's fighting Iron Man and he stands up and he uses that line when he says, "I could do this all day." Like I said, goosebumps.
That made me cry watching the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, because I'm so invested in the first Avenger because of everything he went through and who he was before he became Captain America, that all it does is remind me of that. That was my favorite part. But we're at the end. We don't really have time to pimp all our stuff, but believe you me, this episode will be up at Real World Theology. It will be up at Screenfish, and I can almost guarantee that it will be shared with great efficiency by Cinemagog.
Yeah.
So you will find show notes and other items of interest, how to get a hold of us, how to find us on Twitter and the World Wide Web and all the great things we're doing around the web at each of those sites. So be checking that out. Thanks for listening to this crossover episode. Thank you so much, Steve and James. And thank you, me, for being here.
Thanks, Mikey.
And
thanks, Steve.
Guys, thanks. Let's see. I don't know if you guys have an outro, but feel free to outro it because I know I've got a catchphrase. Steve, you have a catchphrase?
Yeah. We started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
I'm James Edelman, and remember, watch to glorify.
And guys, until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Boom.
Worth a
now, Mike, did you see that article about the Cap Mark Twain Spider-Man conversation?
Yeah, I read that all the day when she posted it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Cool. I didn't see that. You posted an article on there?
I didn't post an article. I found one and read it and found it fascinating just because it gives context. It's because there's the small piece that Peggy says is something Captain America says, but it comes after a long quote from Mark Twain. I don't know. Maybe if you know where it is, Mikey, I was going to say maybe link to it on.
Yeah, it's on my links to put in the show notes.
Sweet.
But see, that's the thing. Like, I was completely Team Cap, and then I went and read that, and read, like, the, you know, him really expounding on what the Republic is. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, this is what the Republic is. It's, I mean, it's less so in the movie and more so in that big speech he gives to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But it is totally, to thine own self be true, man. Like, do what you gotta do. Whatever you believe is what's right. And I'm like, come on. Like, Cap should have thought about this by now. Like, put some caveats in there.
Well, so then in Cap's part of the quote, he says, he's like, you need to stand next to the river of truth. So then, like, the question, okay, right. Well, then, Cap, what is the river of truth? Like, what, if, where's that bank? Like, that so again, it's totally not qualified. That's like, at the end, he adds to Twain and says, you need to plant yourself there. It's like, well, but where's there, man?
Yeah, like, take us there.
It's being written by, you know, not a Christian, but
well, it's what we do on almost every episode that of like Marvel films or something like this. And I'd say at some point in the conversation we get to, isn't it great? Isn't it great? Isn't it great? But why didn't they just answer that final question? And you know, I'm almost positive that James, you said it in this episode. It's like, but it's a Marvel film, and they're only going to go so far, right?
Yeah, they're not going to land the Quinjet. That's just
right.